This podcast may contain adult language, adult situations, spoilers, and some brief nudity, so parental guidance is adjusted.
We have such sights to show you.
After about 5 minutes of this movie, you're gonna wish you had 10 beers.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Oh, well. La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la, yeah.
Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I am the Vern. I am not joined by Ashley this week because she is at work, but I have with me my good friend and buddy, podcasting giant of One Track Mind and Reels of Justice. We have with us here right now, Mr. Ryan Luis Rodriguez. Hello, Ryan.
Hello, Vern. How you doing, buddy?
It is so good to hear from you. It has been a while. Me and Ryan used to host a podcast over at Rabbit Hole Podcast called Tales from the Double R, which is a Twin Peaks podcast. And even though that show is done, and I still like talking to you. And
yeah, I still love you, buddy. I still love you.
I'm still happy that you're on here to talk about Yorgos Lanthimos movie Poor Things, because we're doing our Yahoo for Yorgos series. So thank you very much for coming on to the show. The ultimate. Well, we're going to I do want to ask you this. I'll wait till the end of the episode because I do have one more thing I want to ask you. But tell me, you have been doing so good at your One Track Mind. I listened to the episode on The Love Witch with your lovely lady friend, Isabel. That was a great show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was one of my favorites that we got to do because we did it for Valentine's Day, but then it didn't air until a week after. So never let it be said that we're not on topic.
That's all right. You know, sometimes those love stories, they get even better when it's late.
Yes, so exactly.
I felt like I was like cuddling in bed with you two.
You're always invited, Vern. You're always invited.
I felt the love there. All right. I did. I felt like I was your little dog that you just keep in like the end of the bed. I'm just there to keep your feet warm, is what I do.
Right.
That's what Vern does.
We appreciate it. Oh, we appreciate it.
You can listen to Cinema Recall Podcasts on all types of podcast platforms, such as Good Pods, Podchaser. We're available on Newsly. Newsly is an all-in-one audio app for iOS and Android phone. It puts the most trending articles on the web and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time ever, the entire web becomes listenable. Stop scrolling, start listening, go to newsly.me, use a promo code RECALL, and get 1 month free of their premium service. Ryan.
Yes.
This is part of the show that we do every week called Rage Corner. Rage Corner, brought to you by the gents over at the Film Rage Podcast. This is where we rage angrily or rage happily about stuff going on in the entertainment industry. And since you are our guest this week, Ryan, what do you have to rage about?
I have to rage about the motion picture Madam Web, which came out 2 weeks ago, I think.
Okay.
And it's part of the adjunct Sony Spider-Man-less Spider-Man universe, where they take characters that have something to do with Spider-Man and then take Spider-Man out of them, because that makes perfect sense. So far, we've gotten Venom, which sucked. We got Morbius, which sucked. And now we have the worst of the bunch.
Well, we got Venom, the Venom 2. Venom.
Yeah, I was deliberately leaving that one out because it has some cute moments, but okay. Madam Web is the worst of these movies. Oh my God. It's set in 2003, and yet it's worse than the superhero movies that came out in 2003. It's worse than Daredevil. Let that sink in, folks. Worse than Daredevil.
It was Daredevil that bad of a movie? I don't know now.
I loved it when it came out, but then we rewatched it for Reels of Justice, and I was sitting there the whole time like, I like this then? Like, what a dumb kid I was. Oh my God.
Even though it's not connected in that same universe, what about Catwoman? Worse than Catwoman.
Catwoman's fun. That's the difference. Madam Web is a slog. It is 2 hours long, and you feel it every 5 minutes when you're like, okay, this would be a good time to wrap up movie. Yeah, now would be good too. Nope, you're not going to do that? Okay, well, how about now? Catwoman is so batshit crazy that I kind of admire it. Whereas Madam Web, I look at it and I'm like, this is not acceptable. You cannot put this in a movie theater. No, this is a direct-to-video at best.
Is it trying to be campy? Is it trying to be serious?
It's not. That's what they'll probably say in 5 years, that, oh, we were intentionally bad. Yeah, yeah, we did this on purpose. No, they didn't. Don't listen to anybody who says that this is an ironic masterpiece. This movie is bad. It doesn't know that it's bad. It's awful.
You know, I hear the bad reviews about this movie, and I'm not going to pay to see it in theaters. But
that's wise. That's wise.
If it comes to a streaming network and it's around, I will probably watch it. If it's not,
it'll
like
be on Netflix. It'll be on Netflix in 2 months.
All right, I can wait for that because I have my roommate's account that I can watch it on.
Well, so don't let them hear that. They're gonna crack down on you.
Yeah, sorry, I'll leave that part out right there. Who needs to? Because I saw trailers for this and I'm thinking maybe it just doesn't need to happen. I like to
Dwayne
Johnson.
I knew it was going
to
be terrible, though. That's the thing. And then I'm glad that I have the AMC A-list. So technically, I did not pay for a ticket to go see it. Technically, they got my money at the beginning of the month. It doesn't matter what movies I see. They don't care. Nobody cares. So thankfully, I did not plunk down $20 to see this in a Dolby Cinema theater. I paid zero, and I had shitty popcorn, and the popcorn was the best part of the movie.
The only thing that would keep me to see this movie is because of Dakota Johnson. I did like the new Suspiria with her in it, so
she is out of her depth in this movie. She cannot carry a major motion picture. I'm sorry to say. She's a very beautiful young woman. I'm sure she's a talented actress. You cannot tell in this movie.
It seems to me, too, when you watch like press junkets with her about this movie, she doesn't really give a shit about right. the hate this movie she's getting, which I kind of admire a
yeah,
little bit.
Yeah, I mean, as a person, I'm behind her 100%. As an actor, I don't know how I feel.
That's fair. That's totally fair, Ryan. All right, that's a good rage corner right there. I saw a movie that makes me think Madam Web may not be so bad. I just got done watching the movie Bottoms. And I hated this movie.
Oh, you're crazy.
So much.
This movie's great.
I thought this movie was just absolutely just dog shit. I hated the characters. I hated the storyline. I will say this though, after the first like 10 minutes, 5 minutes of the movie, it's about these two outcasts who start a fight club to get with the cheerleaders. That's the initial concept of the movie. And I found both the lead characters, actors in this, to be just horrible people. Just horrible people. I did not like the tone this was going for. Yeah, I just thought this was...
It's the new Heathers. What are you talking about,
Vern?
It's great.
God,
it's
please,
great.
No. No,
it's so
God.
Good.
They said that about Mean Girls being the new Heathers, all right?
Oh, God, no. No.
Jennifer's body is better than this, all right?
Well, that's close, but yeah. Bottoms is great.
Agree to disagree, man. I just could not stand
this movie
all there.
That's fair.
Sorry, I may be the minority, too. And who knows? You know what's funny, too? I'm going to watch Madam Web and be like, that movie's amazing. How can we like this movie? This movie's fucking great. So
you'll be trying it on Reels of Justice in 5 months.
You probably will be.
That'd and be I'll epic. Have to go against you, and I'll have to lay the smack down. That's okay.
Yeah, that's right. I say, if you go against Ryan on the Reels of Justice podcast, make sure you get all of your facts and all of your case notes together well, because Ryan here is a fucking shark. He is like a legal shark when it comes to movie defense or movie prosecutions, and he'll
turn I'm a bitch. Apart. I'm a total bitch. I don't deny it.
Oh, love it there. But yeah, I'll make sure I'll post links in the show notes about where to find both Reels of Justice podcast as well as One Track Mind. Your episodes on One Track Mind are really good. I love your Ryan's recommendations. I love the fact that in One Track Mind, you give kerplunch and you give respect to audio commentaries. It's very cool. I learned a lot from listening to your show.
Oh, that's very sweet. Thank you.
It makes me want to go back, like, rewatch movies with the commentary tracks on there as well. I plan on rewatching The Love Witch with the commentary from Anna Biller.
It's a great track. So good. Oh. She is so knowledgeable and does literally everything in the movie. Like, Anna Biller is the best. She's amazing.
She's only made just two movies, too, which I find
right, and she's worked. She's been working on one for like 5 years, and I keep waiting for it to come out, but I don't even think she's started shooting it yet, and I can't wait anymore.
I love her movie so much. It's Bluebeard's Castle, and she wrote the novel that's released right now.
And then, oh, it is? That's out there?
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta go find that.
And I think that's what she's gonna use to make the movie out of is that.
So. Oh, I can't wait to read that then.
That's very cool. Well, Ryan, thank you very much. We are going to take just a small little break right now to play some ad spots from some amazing podcast shows, and then we will return, okay?
Okay.
I was having serious problems in the bedroom, and in the car, and on the bus. But I couldn't help but think there had to be something out there for people suffering just like me.
Podcast dysfunction affects 6 out of 7 cinema geeks out there, but there is help. The Simplistic Reviews Podcast, a show where Matthew Stewart, DJ Valentine, and Justin Polizzi talk movies, TV, and all other forms of pop culture and entertainment.
Symptoms of the Simplistic Reviews Podcast may include loss of sleep, loss of hair, longer erections, lost family get-together, bleeding of eyes, ears, and anus, divorce, hated by town folk, rash, the ability to drink alcohol and podcast at the same time, being called a cocksucker, loser, mansplaining, weight gain, weight loss, people with severe podcasting games, depression, happiness, growth of boobs and hair on chest, constant peeing, watery eyes, and 3 additional inches on your penis, and if you don't have a penis, you will now. The Simplistic Reviews Podcast. Ask your doctor today.
Thanks to the Simplistic Reviews Podcast, I'm no longer bored in the bedroom. Plus, I have a perpetual erection. Although I think I'm going blind.
The Simplistic Reviews Podcast. A small price to pay for entertainment.
We're back, Cinema Recall Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Let's talk about Poor Things. Here is a trailer.
I have a surprise for you. Get in.
Poor Things is unlike anything you've seen.
A woman plotting her course to freedom. And not all.
It's hysterically funny.
Oh.
Incredible cinematic experience you won't soon forget.
There is a world to enjoy, traverse, circumnavigate.
It's the best film of the year.
We more.
One's enough, and more's too much.
Poor Things, rated R.
All right, so Poor Things is directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, and it stars Emma Stone, Mark Ruffalo, William Dafoe, and it has appearances from Margaret Qualley in this.
Briefly, Ryan, yeah, she's in there for like 5 minutes or less than that. She's in maybe 2 minutes.
Yeah, but still, makes an impression nonetheless.
Yes, absolutely.
Ryan, before you saw Poor Things, what is your sort of like history with Yorgos Lanthimos? What was the first movie you saw of his?
First movie of his I saw was The Lobster, which I adored. Yes. I fucking love that movie so much. And that kind of like that broke open the floodgates. And that was right around that was maybe a year or so before The Favorite came out. So I watched that as well. Loved it. And then I went back and watched Dogtooth, which is also great.
Yes.
But I think my favorite of the bunch would be The Lobster. But I was expecting kind of a melding between The Lobster and The Favorite. And I think kind of got that. I think that that's, if you look at it on just like a textual level, I think that's a pretty close description of what Poor Things is. But it also goes into crazy Tim Burton land, and it's definitely amped up from those other movies.
Yeah, and you're right about that. I'm going to read really quickly from the IMDb description about Poor Things, because I have a hard time trying to describe this movie using my own voice, okay?
Oh, you too? So, I have that problem every week on One Track Mind.
See, I just, so according to what I'm looking up on the Google Sphere and the IMDb, it says here, brought back to life by an orthodox scientist, a young woman runs off with a lawyer on a worldwide adventure across the continents. Free from the prejudices of her times, she grows steadfast in her purpose to stand for equality and liberation. I've been a fan of Yorgos Lanthimos ever since I saw Dogtooth.
Was that your first?
That was my first one I saw of his, was Dogtooth. And then I did see The Lobster, because Lobster's like, oh, he's doing his first English language, you know, first movie. That's great. Then I saw The Killing of Sacred Deer, and then
that's on my wish list. I have that. I own that one, but I have not had the time to watch it yet, and I'm dying to watch it.
It's very different, because Poor Things was, I think, if I'm looking up the cast, or at least the writers, I know it's written from the same people that did The Favorite.
Okay.
So when you watch Poor Things and The Favorite, you're thinking, oh yeah, these are very similar because they're both written by the same people.
They both have wide-angle photography.
Yeah, they do. The Fisheye Lens. Yeah, but was it now Robbie, what's her name, Robbie Richardson, or not Robbie something, and I'm...
Yeah. Robbie Richardson is Scorsese's cinematographer.
You're right. Sorry, Robbie Ryan is the director of photography.
Great work. Oh boy, was she nominated?
The cinematography is nominated for...
Awesome. Good. Oscar. Well deserved. So, yes. Well deserved.
As well as the screenplay, which is by Tony McNamara, based on the book from Alessandro Gray. Tony McNamara also wrote The Favorite. Very good. I don't know. I think that did that win for best Oscar at the Oscars?
It didn't win best picture because it was up against Parasite.
Yes,
right, no, that was 2019.
It didn't win for that, but I thought maybe it would have The Favorite. Did it
won it for, won for Olivia Colman won.
She did, yes, for Best Actress.
And then didn't Emma Stone win?
Not, she was nominated, but she did not.
Nominated, okay. It's been a while since that ceremony.
Mm-hmm. So, and this movie has almost a lot of like comparison. Not what each of Yorgos Lanthimos' movies are very different.
But they have they have echoes of other ones.
But this one is definitely more of like a fantasy tale. Like, this is the first time I think Yorgos Lanthimos is adapting a story. Even though in The Favorite, he's taking historical context and making an original story about it. Poor Things is actually an adaptation of a book, which I have not read. I'm very curious now to read the book after I've seen this movie.
Yeah, just to see how different it is.
I love the fact about how this movie begins, because it's all in black and white. Very gorgeous black and white cinematography. And you're introduced to the character of Bella Baxter, played wonderfully by Emma Stone. And Bella Baxter is this new being. She's just been created by William Dafoe's character, who she calls God. And I don't want to get into details about how she was created, because I kind of want to save that for people who haven't seen it to actually watch it. And even though it's not like a huge spoiler, it still feels like...
It's a shock. When you hear it, it's a shock.
Yeah. But you understand why this person is the way it is. I just tell people it's a Frankenstein story. William Dafoe's character created this woman. In fact, I saw with friends of mine, and they said, you know, it has elements of, like, Weird Science. Elements of that. People say it reminds them a lot of H.G. Geiger meets steampunk.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I was there. But I would ask you, Ryan, just give me your first kind of impressions of watching Poor Things for the first time. Like, especially when you went into this movie seeing Yorgos Lanthimos' other movies, like The Lobster and The Favorite, were you expecting it to be kind of like dark and droll like those other movies were? Were you expecting, because for me, I wasn't expecting it to be so heartwarming and, you know, very charmingly funny and sweet ending.
Yeah, I was anticipating it being funny because of the trailers. Mm-hmm. But all I knew about the movie was the trailers. And this was actually the first Yorgos movie that I've actually seen in a theater.
Oh,
yes. So the other movies I saw on Blu-ray. But this was the first one I saw in the theater. And I loved how the audience was reacting to it. Because anytime there was a sex scene, you could feel the people in the audience like gasping. Because the people that go to my theater are generally pretty old. And so they're like, they're watching this movie, and this is probably like an absolute shock to them. Like, sex in a movie? Oh, my stars. Oh, the vapors. Oh, like, they were shocked by it. And that just made it more fun for me. Because I'm just feeding off their reaction.
That's great, Ryan. You know what's a little bit shocking? Do you remember the movie Blue is the Warmest Color?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, totally.
So I saw that in theaters. And I went to went to a matinee, and the whole matinee was filled with people that looked like my grandparents. And awesome. I was there by myself, and I'm there with a whole bunch of like grand couples.
Oh my
god! Watching Blue is the Warmest Color,
3-hour porno movie.
Those scenes come on in that movie, and I just try to like make eye contact with every one of them.
God, I wish I was there. Oh, that seems like the perfect way to watch that movie. Oh, man.
Oh, it's been great. But when I saw Poor Things, and yeah, you definitely heard some like gasps and shocks when set scenes are happening between Mark Ruffalo and Emma Stone. But it seemed to be almost like goofy. There's nothing really like sexual about it. I mean, don't get me wrong. Emma Stone is a very attractive person. Oh, she's just so delicious looking, but I just never found those scenes to be like, oh, just super hot. It just seems to be.
Yeah, they're not erotic. They're stylized. Well, not even stylized. They're sexual, but they're not erotic.
Yeah.
It's not like they're trying to arouse the audience. They're trying to put them off balance and trying to get you in Bella's head. But they're not like, check this out. This is fucking hot. Yeah. Well,
I like the fact, too, that Bella's just kind of discovering this stuff for the first time, and she's just, like, amazed by it. She, you know, she's amazed that she can touch herself and feel good about it. She's like, oh, my gosh, my body can do this? Holy shit, I can't believe my body is actually doing this. And then she goes to one of the housemaids, and she's like, holy shit, you gotta try this, hold on. And she starts to try to touch her, and she's like, oh, what are you doing? She's like, oh, no, don't worry, you're not giving time. And she's trying to feel her up, and oh, that's just...
Yeah. The wonder of discovery.
Yeah, see? And then we have, I forgot the guy's name now, but her first sort of like fiance, not Mark Ruffalo's character.
Rami Youssef?
Yes, Rami Youssef. He comes into her life and he's totally enamored with her. It seems that both William Dafoe's character and his character, they both have a lot of like love and respect for her, but they kind of want to keep her controlled in a way, not so much as the Mark Ruffalo character, who is there at first and he is smitten by her and he wants to take her out and, you know, have all this incredible sex with her. But then when she starts to read and have minds of her own, then Mark Ruffalo's character is like, ah, no, sorry. I don't like the way you are right now. I want you to be just for me and me alone. And that's it.
And I know he's a repulsive character, but oh my god, Mark Ruffalo is fucking hot. My god. It's not the lesson I should be learning from this motion picture, but as the first second he showed up on screen, I was like, that's a snack. Look at that. Ooh, look at that mustache. Yeah, that's some hot piece of man right there.
Ooh, Duncan, Duncan Wedderburn, and he does have like this very late stylist mustache, and I'll never be able to have my mustache grow
way. Me neither. I can't do it. I just can't do it. I don't know why. It frustrates me. I want the Ruffalo. I want to have the Ruffalo on the face.
Oh, So she's engaged to, and I look at the character names, Matt McCandles. That's the Remy Yusuf. He's the guy that's engaged to Bella Baxter, and he gets involved with her. And it's funny too, because she definitely wants to have sex with them, but he's like, no, we gotta wait till marriage. And she's like, well, I don't want to wait till marriage anymore. And then Duncan Whittaker comes in. He whisks her off into this whirlwind adventure, and they're at this gorgeous venue they go to. I don't even know the name of that first town they go to, but is it Paris? I forget. It's just absolute.
Oh, I don't remember, gorgeous. But it's definitely a locale recreated on a studio set, which they don't do very much anymore. That used to be the norm. That was like in the 40s and 50s. That was how you made movies. In the 30s, actually, especially. But this is reality plus. This does not take place in our world. This takes place in some alternate dimension where the skies are different, the seas are different, every single object you encounter is different. It's an alternate universe.
This world feels like it's something from the past and yet has future elements into it.
Yes, so, you mentioned steampunk earlier, and that's a very accurate description of a lot of these sets.
It almost has like this anime quality, almost like a Ghibli style quality.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, absolutely. Definitely
Ghibli. To the set designs and the way they have like these monorails pass overhead.
Reminds me of Disneyland. It's the Skyway.
I almost expect to have to see like talking fishes in this movie and just like other.
Yeah, it's a crossover with The Incredible Mr. Limpet.
It's nice.
Don Knox just shows up randomly. Go! You're having sex with lots of people! Wow! Mr. Furley! Wow!
Oh, right. I want that to be so badly in a movie right now. Like, Don. Mr. Limpet as a fish just.
Bella and Mr. Chicken. That's the spinoff.
Oh, gosh, yes. And I think Bella's trying to get Mr. Limpet laid, and it just backfires and everything too. She's trying to show him all the things to do with its little fish body and everything.
Look, you're a fish. I have something that smells like fish. We can get along together.
But yeah. Anyways, folks, did a little sidetrack there about different movies that we want to see happening to review on Cinema Recall. I found, even though Duncan Wedderbird, yes, to be very despicable, just absolutely just hysterically a funny person. And during the course of her relationship with Duncan Wedderbird, things start to change for them because she starts to become more of her own person and she wants to establish more of the world, and she feels kind of constricted and closed off by him. And then Duncan Wedderbird says, oh, you want to see more of the world? I can show you more of the world. Just get into this trunk. And she's like, okay. And then they're now on a boat and they're sailing the seas, and Bella Baxter ends up meeting two people on this boat. And I had to...
Gerard Carmichael. I forget what his character's name is, but he's the important one, I think.
Yeah. And it's worth it too. I'm looking stuff. This might be a small little race corner, but I'm looking things up on IMDb, but never list the main characters at the front. So you have to like kind of scroll through to try and okay, yeah. Harry Astley.
That's Gerard?
Yes, that's Gerard Carmichael. He's the character of Harry Astley. And Hannah Shigula plays Martha Van Cutsrock. She's the older woman on the boat. And they get more involved in philosophy, and she's learning things more about other people. And Mark Ruffalo is just getting character, Wedderburn is getting character, Duncan is getting frustrated with her because he wants her just to be that fun person that just wants sets all the time. And now that she started to think on her own, he has more difficult time trying to control who she is. And there's a great moment where they're at a dinner table with some of his friends, and she starts to eat the food and she spits it out and she goes, well, why am I putting this in my mouth? It's revolting. He takes her off the side. He's like, right, look, all I want you to say is things are marvelous and fantastic. And how is your fish? And she goes back to the table.
I must go punch that baby.
Yes. She does that, but before that, one of the ladies at the table says, how are you doing? And the lady goes, oh, my dad just died. And Emma Stone goes, oh, that's marvelous. And just her, she thinks by herself, and she says all the things that we wish we could say, but we don't get to say sometimes. And
her character, I speak of this as an autistic man.
Okay.
I believe that her character is not just granted autonomy through sexual congress. I believe that this movie is in its own way an autism parallel. Because, or parable rather, because I think that part of having Asperger's is not really knowing how to interact with other people and looking at other people and trying to replicate how they react in their own lives in order to grant some sense of normalcy. And so she's observing everybody around her and taking on properties of them as a way of trying to figure out who she is. And that's something that I've been dealing with my entire life, even though I wasn't diagnosed until like 10 years ago. So I was doing that my entire life, did not realize why I was doing it. And I saw a lot of that in Bella's character.
You know, it's fascinating that you say that too, Ryan, because I did watch this with some friends of mine. I saw this movie twice in theaters, one with my co-host, Ashley, and then second time with other friends of mine. And I do have a friend of mine, you know, who is autistic. And after he watched it, he goes, you know what? I saw a lot of elements in Bella Baxter in me, the way that she talks to people. There's one sequence where she tries to find information from a hotel clerk, and the hotel clerk is not saying the right things or not responding to her the right way, and she just leaves. And my friend goes, yeah, I would have done the same thing too. If I don't get the answer I want, I just sort of like leave without them really answering me because I want to know about one thing, and I go. So yeah, that's pretty cool. So now, I really want to go through like a plot by plot description of what happens in this movie. It's just a bunch of fantastical things. She ends up getting a job at the oldest profession in the world, and I'll just leave it at that. But I found the way that Bella Baxter deals with her clientele to be someone who is very open to the human experience and someone that wants to just like experience everything. She wants to like see everything and like listen to everyone. She's a very
liberated
too, but she wants to be kind of involved with everyone to the point there too where she does end up getting married to the and I forgot his name right now, the Yosef, and I had to look up his name up here because I'm a bad Matt. She does get married to Matt, but she also does have, you know, other pleasures. She has a girl she meets that she really likes, and I like the fact, too, that Matt is totally comfortable about being in a poly relationship, like an open relationship where she can be with other people and he doesn't seem to be threatened by it. He doesn't seem to be the cuckold of the group. Right. But maybe he is, but maybe that's his thing. I don't know.
It's no, hard I don't think so. I think that he's just he's enlightened. He's a little more forgiving of all that stuff.
Yeah, she's say there too, like, you know, well, you know, I did have, you know, sex with other men, and he's like, that's okay, I don't mind. And she goes, no, I did charge for it, usually about, you know, 30 quid, and he goes, well, that seems awfully low price, but it's your body and I respect you. And I'll say this right now, to have a one night with Emma Stone as Bella Baxter, yeah, that would be, you know, 5 grand. Yeah, that'd be worth, yeah, a grand.
See, I would pay 6 grand for Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm a big giver too, so it could get 5% gratuity, maybe 10. See how well things go.
I mean, I imagine that there has to be some sort of like cosplay fetish shop work to have this movie be played. Like, there's be some sort of fetish workshops where this could be someone's fantasy.
Yeah, the only thing missing is that Emma Stone never puts on a furry costume at any point. But if she did, oh man, people would be reenacting this forever.
I know, right? Totally. Shouts right now to our friends over at Full Swap Radio, which is a kink and fetish podcast site. We're available on their Sunday programming called Vanilla Sundays, which you listen to us every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. But yeah, I really just cannot wait to watch the adult version of this movie from Wicked Pictures or Digital Playground.
Poon things.
Oh, hey now.
It doesn't really work in terms of the rhyming scheme, but just by replacing a letter, I think it works. I think if you look at it on screen, it works. But if you say it out loud, it does not work.
It works all just the same right there. Now, I went to look up differences now from the book to the movie, but I don't think I know nothing about Alexander Gray. All I know is that he wrote, besides this, he wrote one called 30 Minute Theater and one called Theater 625. I definitely will go see, not see the book. I'm curious about reading the book, but maybe not right now. Ah.
See, I'll go see the book. I'm okay with that.
You go see the book, okay.
I'll go to the library, look at the book, and go, yep, that's a cover. Then walk away, go to the DVD section. Poon things. I never seen this one. Better pick that out.
Gotta do that right there. It's weird that I know this based on a book, but the way that it's made, it feels it's connected to the other movies that Yorgos Lanthimos made.
It's so cinematic that you would never guess that it was literary derived. Like it feels like 100% its own thing. It feels like something that plopped out of his head. And that he just made manifest.
I mean, from what I tell right there, All right. So here's the thing here, though. Where's my plot? Here's the plot of what it says about the Book of Poor Things, real quickly. The main body of the work centers on Bella Baxter, a woman whose early life and identity are the subject of some ambiguity. That ambiguity is complicated by her husband, Archibald McCandley's autobiography, Episodes from the Early Life of a Scottish Public Health Officer, which distorts the truth about his life with Bella. He claims that she was a corpse resurrected by McCandley's colleague, the scientist Dr. Goodwin Baxter, who had her, I'm not going to read that part, result in having, while designed to Bella's companion, her sexual appetite caused her to pursue other men, including McCandrus, a foolish lawyer named Duncan Wedderburn, with whom she lopes. And so, yeah, it kind of follows a lot of the same plot of it. It's just the story.
Weird, because it does not feel like a book. That's the crazy part, is that it feels like a movie.
Yeah, but the book is like, it's a book within a book. Like, the book is telling you the autobiography of this one character, and he's telling you the story about...
It's like a William Goldman novel, basically. It's The Princess Bride.
Yeah. So that sounds very... I'm very intrigued now. Because the book came out in 1982.
Whoa. That's pretty old.
It's pretty old.
That's only 6 years old, younger than me. Oh, my God.
Yeah. That was a little baby right there. But it almost, when watching this, you almost, I'm trying to imagine how this movie would look with a different director or someone went with their own look of this and how it would be. You mentioned like Tim Burton.
I think Tim Burton would not make it with the sex, but it would look exactly like that, minus the fisheye lenses. I think that the production design would look exactly like this. The costumes would be from, what's her name? Colleen Atwood. They would be Colleen Atwood costumes. It would be a Caroline Thompson script. But it would look exactly like this.
I would say they wouldn't even. He would not even use Danny Elfman's music, but Shirley Walker's music instead. So, and I don't want to say to people that this movie is only good because of its set scenes. I mean,
no, God, no. That's the least interesting part of the movie.
It's a weird thing to see because a lot of people are talking about the set scenes just because they are, okay, when you see the set scenes, they are just, they're full. They, yeah, I wish they were longer, but you are definitely seeing Emma Stone and Mark Ruffalo do many positions with each other, you know, doggy, cowgirl, missionary, whole bunch of things, and very kind of like graphic details. I love Emma Stone's orgasm face. That's like my favorite thing in the world. I want to put that on a t-shirt and just wear that everywhere out in public because I just think it's an absolute work of art what she does with her face when she's orgasm, and I am completely envious and jealous of anyone that gets to be around that and sees it for real. I'm sure it's just acting, but it's a wonderful, absolute performance, and it's one of the hottest I've seen in a while. But as I mentioned before, it's all kind of like goofy. There are some elements where she's having sex with someone, and they bring a lot of humor back in the set scenes, which I'm very happy about when they do that, because a lot of times sex is just very kind of funny, and it's ridiculous and silly, and it's not as like sexy and erotic as you see in movies a lot of times. It's just
freaking in blue is the warmest color, like that.
Well, that, or, well, yeah.
That's, I just hot. Some, that movie that was hot.
Ooh, that boy. Is true. That Ooh, is. That,
Lea Seydoux? Come on. Yeah. Oh, my God. Talk about a beautiful woman. Talk about Emma Stone, but I want to talk about Lea Seydoux.
Lea Seydoux is a very.
One of my all-time crushes. Oh, my God.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, shit. Now I got an idea about who I want to have do a topic on is Lea Seydoux.
She's all over the place, man. She's done so much. Oh my God! You could do Mission Impossible: Ghost Protocol. You could do Spectre.
Yep.
You could do France, which I just watched on the Criterion Channel. You could do.
Oh yeah, I saw.
So much.
All right, Crimes of the Future and Glorious.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Oh yeah. She totally.
She's also in The Lobster, which is.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
If you ever get a chance to read the comic book of Blue is the Warmest Color, it's really good, and I like the storyline better in the comic than I did in the actual movie itself. So
wait, is it based on a comic or is it a comic adaptation?
No, it's based on a comic. The movie is based on a comic.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's got this like glorious watercolor artwork. It is beautiful. I can't put my finger on who it reminds me of. Like if it was animated, it would remind me of the Triplets of Belleville, that kind of style.
Okay.
If it was to be animated, it was very good. Yeah. Poor Things is a book that I will definitely watch. This is a movie that I need to watch more of it again because it's a very confusing movie. Watch it. Not so much watching, you can understand the characters and everything they're going through. But what makes it kind of like really odd and shocking for me as a viewer is that you start to really get yourself connected with Bella Baxter and you start to agree with everything she does have to say about the world. And I tell people this, even though they're very different characters, I think that Bella Baxter may be a more feminist hero than Barbie is. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
You know, that's a fair point to raise. I would say that they're about even.
Sure.
But I think that the message of autonomy is stronger in Poor Things. Yeah. But I think that I prefer Barbie.
That's fair. You know, and I know I watched some critics saying that Barbie is a great gateway message about the patriarchy and, you know, how women need to be like respected more, and then Poor Things kind of elevates it more. Like Poor Things is like the college thesis of
that. Barbie is the training wheels version.
Yes, very much so. But yeah, because I totally liked Bella Baxter's openness about everything. She's upfront and honest about what she wants. She's like, hey, you know what? I want to be with this person and I want to try this right here. And maybe just go back and do some of this right here. I've never been with a woman before. Let me try this. Okay. You know? And yet she still remains kind of like loyal to her husband. And that's to say, hey, you know, people, you can actually have these types of relationships and still be loyal and still love people and have that type of devotion you have for other people. Yeah, I just found it to be, it's a very new thing.
Your body and spirit are different. They do not need to be shared.
I feel like now with this movie getting over like 11 Oscar nominations, that it's sort of like opening people up to these new ideas, and it's starting off slow. And
I think that if this was not Lily Gladstone's year, Emma Stone would be taking home the Oscar for Best Actress.
All right, see, I still think that I still think Emma Stone's going to win that Best Actress Oscar.
Oh, you're so wrong. No, this is Lily's year. Lily's got it nailed down.
You see, okay. Did she win the SAG Awards?
I believe she did.
She did.
I know she won the Golden Globe.
She did. Yes, she did win Golden Globes. Okay, that's. I still made the maybe mistake of choosing Emma Stone, and I'm still going to stick to my guns and say Emma Stone. I have not seen Killers of the Flower Moon, so I cannot say which
is better.
You
should go see it. It's great. It sidelines her for an entire hour, and it's incredibly frustrating, but the rest of the movie is great.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk really quickly now, because I said before that this is up for, count them, 11 Oscars, and I'm trying to look them up right now. All right. So here we go. Best achievement in makeup and hairstyling. Do you agree with that?
For Willem Dafoe alone, yes, absolutely. All right. His crazy, craggy face.
Best achievement in music written for the motion picture.
Yes, 100%.
All right. Let's see now. Best achievement in directing.
Yeah, absolutely. Not one of my top five picks, but of all the people nominated, that's fair.
Okay. All right. Is being nominated for best actor in a supporting role, Mark Ruffalo?
Hell yeah.
He is up against Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, Downey's going to win. Unfortunately, Downey's going to win. But Ruffalo's fucking great in this movie.
What? Ryan Gosling's not going to win for Barbie?
He's supporting? I thought he was lead.
No, but Ryan Gosling for supporting.
I would vote Gosling, but I think Downey's going to take it.
Downey's going to take it.
Because he's been sweeping through all the awards for the past like 3 months and just fucking winning everything.
It's nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay.
Yes, because I couldn't even tell it was based on a book. So, hell yeah.
Yeah, we're doing it. Best achievement in cinematography for Robbie Ryan?
Yes, 100%.
Best achievement in film editing? Another Yorgos name, Yorgos Mavrotopoulos. Mavrotopoulos. Yeah, Yorgos Dos is a film editor.
Yorgos the Deuce.
Yorgos the Deuce, yes. and then production design.
Yes. James. Oh yeah. I would pick this. I would actually pick. It's a toss up of this over Barbie, but I think I would pick this.
Barbie is so good. Barbie has some incredible production design.
That's the problem, is that these are neck and neck, man. That's a tough. Oh my god.
It's a really tough one. It's got to be either one. I think I know in polls. I think I did choose Barbie. But I would be just as happy if this one too. I would not be upset because they both do just incredible works.
I would vote for Barbie just because I want Barbie to win something other than Best Original Song.
I do too. I'm worried about that. Do they even have People's Choice Awards anymore?
Yeah, they do.
They do. Okay. Well, then Barbie did another award for that, which is fair, because I thought the whole thing, the Golden Globes doing the whole movie, the best movie that won $1 million or whatnot, it was just a bullshit consolation prize.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we finally do have a best achievement in costume design, Holly Waddington. So
yes, 100%.
Oh, it did win some BAFTAs. Okay, hey, it went for best film at the BAFTAs. That's cool.
I think it won best comedy at the Golden Globes, didn't it?
It did win best comedy at Golden Globes. Emma Stone for best actress at the BAFTAs as well. Critics Choice. Best Actress, Emma Stone. I'm still going to say she's going to get her second Best Actress win with this one. I think Lily Gladstone will have her time another year, Ryan.
Oh, no, you can't do this to me, Vern. You can't do this to me. No, you can't take it away from me. No. You're going to have me back on in a month so I can yell at you for being wrong.
Okay. I will totally welcome that at any time. But I will say this, with Poor Things may be Yardo's Land the most like widely audience pleased and accepted film. Like, if you've never seen a Yorgos Lanthimos movie before, I recommend people to watch this first. Like, because I know a lot of my friends did not care for The Lobster, and they hated The Killing of a Sacred Deer even more.
Crazy people.
I know The Favorite is the other one I would show them. It's between The Favorite and Poor Things. I think I'll show them The Favorite first. I think the set stuff may pull some people off, especially like my parents and whatnot, but I still like to show them first. I don't know, if you had to show your folks or any family members a Yorgos Lanthimos movie first, Ryan, are you going to show them this or The Favorite, or maybe Dogtooth? Maybe they'll watch Dogtooth more. I don't know.
No, my mom would hate Dogtooth. My dad hates anything artistic, so he'd hate that too. Yeah, I think I would go with The Favorite. The Favorite is his most mainstream, I think. This is his gonzo sci-fi epic. So this is what you, when you're primed by The Favorite, then you go back to The Lobster and you go, oh, that's okay, that's interesting. That's how he works with American actors.
Yeah.
Then once you're primed for that weird sci-fi universe, then you can go to Poor Things. But I think those two are important stepping stones.
You gotta do The Favorite, then The Lobster, and then Poor Things.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And then afterwards, then I will say, yes, go watch The Killing of a Sacred Deer and Dogtooth
and Alps and all that stuff.
Yep. Alps is another one I like to cover, but I don't, it's a difficult one to find online unless I pay to rent it. So yeah.
It's on Blu-ray. It just came out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's true. But problem is, Ryan, a lot of my stores around here, they took away the DVDs.
Really?
Like the Blockbusters did. Not Blockbusters, sorry. Best Buy.
Fuck Best Buy. Fuck Best Buy for what they're doing. Oh, we'll carry video games, but not movies. Fuck you.
Fuck you. Yeah, Barnes & Noble still carries.
God bless Barnes & Noble, even though they charge up everything and everything's. There's no such thing as suggested retail price at Barnes & Noble. There's, we can sell this Criterion disc for $50. Why not? Yeah, someone's going to pay for it.
Yeah. Is it probably best to just go through the website of Criterion than through Barnes & Noble?
Yes, that's what I would do. Yes.
But then
they have their sales twice every year. That's what I'm waiting for. I have all these 4Ks that I want to buy that I'm waiting for the sale because I got my coupons for being a Criterion Channel subscriber. I'm ready. Give me that sale.
There's so many new things I want to get on 4K. After I listened to your episode on After Hours that you did,
that's a great disc. That's a great fucking disc.
I need to get the 4K of that because I lost my DVD copy of After Hours that had the commentary track.
I'm sorry.
I am sorry too because I really like that. But that's all Criterion's releasing the new 4K version of it. I'm like, okay, that's one I gotta watch because anytime I can see Roseanne Arquette in 4K, it's always a good thing.
Yeah, it looks amazing. It's and I mean, like, Scorsese has some beautiful looking movies on 4K. You got Casino, which I, one of my favorites, absolutely. You got Goodfellas. You got Wolf of Wall Street. They always look good. Shutter Island, Hugo. They always look good, but After Hours, because it's 80s, it looks as good as Raging Bull does in 4K. Like, it looks good.
Oh, sweet. All right. Well, very cool. Ryan, was there anything you want to say about Poor Things before we
wrap it up? I think we covered everything.
I did want to mention quickly about Margaret Qualley, who has a very small appearance in this movie. She is amazing. I love Margaret Qualley very much. And I know that one of the last characters that we meet in this movie is a character played by Christopher Abbott.
Yes, and both Christopher Bastard. Bastard.
But Christopher Abbott and Margaret Qualley were in a movie together called Sanctuary, which is now streaming on Hulu. At least it was last time I checked.
I gotta go watch that then.
It is really good.
Hulu head.
I don't want to spoil anything about it, but it reminds me of the movie Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, you got me sold. You got me sold right there. You just mentioned Punch Drunk Love ever, and you say anything that kind of reminds me of that, I will watch it. That was my favorite movie for like 2 years. I fucking love that movie.
Plus that and the movie Secretary with James Spader.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'm down.
Totally. It's a nice little, if you don't mind movies where just two actors talk in a room together.
I do not.
Okay. Then yes, I will recommend this because it is good. It just goes through many different things. It's a dark comedy, then it's a thriller, and then it's romantic elements and sexy and funny and just all.
If you've got tonal shifts, you've got me interested.
Okay, but that's probably my little small recommendation I have for you. Ryan, we did it.
We're near
the end of this episode. Before I do go, Ryan, there's one other thing I want to ask you, good buddy, because back in the day, me and Ryan hosted a podcast on Rabbit Hole Podcast all about Twin Peaks, and there's one thing about Twin Peaks that I want to bring you back on to Cinema Recall to discuss, and that is Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've been trying to get to that since we started the Twin Peaks podcast. We've been talking about it since the very beginning and how good Cheryl Lee is in that movie. How next level brilliant she is. You name the time and I will gladly come back
I'm almost done. I'm finishing up season 2 of Twin Peaks. Mm-hmm. And even though the later episodes are not my favorite,
it kind of loses the thread a bit.
But you still bring on like Heather Graham and David Duchovny and a whole bunch of other great actors in this.
Well, there's good stuff there. There's definitely good stuff. It's hard to get a solid episode with all the weird Wyndham Earl stuff, and it's a weird tonal miss.
It kind of loses foot in there. But then when I did see the Twin Peaks Firewalk with Me, and thank you, David Lynch, for making that, because it does set everything right.
Yeah, it's a redemption.
In that redemption. In fact, I even just downloaded a book from Audible that goes into more of the history of the Twin Peaks town.
I have that book. I have that book on my shelf. The Secret History of Twin Peaks?
Yes, that's it.
I have The Diary of Laura Palmer. I have both.
Oh, you do? Okay, well, that's very cool. Not reading that right now. Yeah, Secret History of Twin Peaks. But this was kind of cool too, because it has like voice actors telling different stories in there, which I'm kind of curious to
know. Any actors from the show?
Cal McLaughlin, Russ Tamblyn, Michael Horse, David Patrick Kelly.
Oh, nice. Getting Cal McLaughlin, that's a big swing. Nice.
That's a big swing right there. And then new actors, Amy Shields, Robert Knepper, and James Morrison.
Robert Knepper was in The Return. One of the casino bosses.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Yeah, I'm very excited to watch the Return series as well.
I just watched it last year, and it's my favorite thing ever. It literally my favorite thing that's ever been on television other than Mystery Science Theater 3000. Like, it's the greatest thing. It's so good.
That's so cool, man. Before I do go, Ryan, thank you so much, man. Can you do me a favor, man? Just plug what's going on with One Track Mind and Reels of Justice. I didn't talk much of Reels of Justice about the upcoming court cases you have with this.
Including you. You're coming up soon.
Oh, that's right. I am. I'm coming in March, right?
Yeah, March 12th.
Yeah, that's right. I'm coming on there to defend Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Ben has been waiting for this case the movie came out last year.
Shit.
The second that movie came out, maybe two or three days after that movie came out, he texted us and he said, guys, we have to do Dial of Destiny and I have to prosecute. So he has been waiting, my friend. You better have your shit in order, because he's gonna bring the fire, man. You gotta be prepared. I have faith in you, but you gotta be prepared.
Okay, I plan on rewatching it a couple more times.
I'm oh god, oof.
Well, if I gotta be serious about a court case, I gotta be sure.
It's true. You want to be as prepared as possible. Yes,
absolutely. I have to be prepared as possible, especially if I'm gonna be on the Wheels of Justice. I can't be just like, well, this movie is good because I like this moment here and I like this movie. Yeah,
you don't want to take the stance of several people that I could name but won't, because I want to be diplomatic and not mention all the people that let us down by coming on and going, oh yeah, well, I don't like this movie because it's bad. It's like, oh, thank you. You got anything else? No, not really. Okay, no. Cool. Yeah. We just wasted an hour.
I know I made the mistake before with my legal case of Scrooged.
You were good. I was just angry. I had the fire in my belly. Okay. That's the only reason that episode ended up the way it did, because I was so fucking mad.
Okay, fair enough. I thought I was being a bad lawyer there and not prepare my case.
No, you did a good job. You were good. Don't worry about it.
Appreciate that. But yes, folks, that comes to the end of Cinema Recall Podcast. Please check us out everywhere. You can find this episode early if you are a Patreon member. Again, patreon.com/CinemaRecallPod. You're going to get this episode several days in advance, and it's a cool thing, and you help us out very much. And I want to say thank you to those individuals that help give us money and help us out. So in no special order right now, I want to thank Mr. Jason Soto from Rabbit Hole Podcast. Thank you very much, Mr. Soto. I want to thank Matt and Ashley from Mashley at the Movies. Thank you very much for your support. Appreciate that. And then I want to thank Jeanette Mickenham from AKA Jeanette. Thank you very much. I want to thank Mr. Donnie Roberts from the Deep Sea Anthologies. Donnie is going to be on an upcoming episode talking about the movie JFK. So look for that.
Just watched it. Great.
Very cool. Yes. And then we are going to... Oh, I also want to thank Jen McQuaid from Shocked and Applaud. I want to thank Linda Castro from Bedknobs and Broomflicks. And lastly, Harvey Andrus. He doesn't have a site. He just is a friend of ours and just likes giving us money. So thank you, Harvey. And thank you, everyone, for your support. Yeah, I know that we are continuing our Yahoo for Yargo series later in March. We're bringing on the guys from the In Film We Trust podcast to discuss The Lobster. So I know that's coming up here shortly. I'm still trying to find someone for Alps. That's another movie that may be discussed later on. Please check out our past episodes on The Killing of a Sacred Deer with Howard Kastner of Pop Art Podcast, as well as our episodes on Dogtooth with Kaylee from What's Over with Kaylee and Bo from the Collateral Cinema Podcast. Definitely check those out, all at cinemarecall.net. Ryan, where can they find both Reels of Justice as well as One Track Mind?
Both podcasts you can find wherever you listen to podcasts. So wherever you are right now, just go and look up One Track Mind or look up Reels of Justice. On X, you can find me at One Track Mind Pod. On Instagram at One, that is the numeral One, Track Mind Podcast. One Track Mind on Blue Sky. And you can find Reels of Justice at Reels of Justice on Instagram and X and Facebook. And I have a Patreon page at patreon.com/onetrackmindpodcast, where you like this show, you can get every episode early and exclusive bi-weekly bonus episodes.
Very cool. As for our social medias, we're available on Twitter. It's Twitter. I'm not calling the other name. Twitter at @cinema_recall. Facebook and Instagram, Cinema Recall Podcast. Otherwise, just type in Cinema Recall and you can just find us everywhere you can. Please leave us ratings and reviews on your favorite podcast platform. It really helps everything out. And that's it. That's all I have to say right now about the poor things in Yorgos Lanthimos and Cinema Recall. And I have a little outro here. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will see you all soon.
Bye-bye.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.